Please hold the line for the conference host to join us.
Musical interlude.
Yeah. Somebody's phone there.
Yeah.
Right. Well, look, thank you. Thank you very much for coming here this morning on a difficult morning, and a particular thank you to everybody who's swam across swollen rivers, climbed over fallen trees, clambered over mudslides to be here. But I can promise you it's worth it. So our results for the year to the end of April, just nearly a couple of months ago. In summary, we're delighted. A year of growth, growing returns, but building momentum into the business. So our customers are clearly with us. We can see the growth, 3.1% on a like-for-like basis in our box volume. Growth in all regions and a very, very encouraging performance with our large pan-European customers. So the market's with us. We've invested in the business. Not only have we bought a number of businesses during the year, which are performing very well, we've also invested strategically in our company as well, internal investment, which we'll talk more about later. This morning we've announced two further acquisitions, not only building our presence more into Iberia, but also into a particular business in the display market, which again we'll talk more about. So we're delighted with the investment. The investment I know will give very exciting financial returns in the coming years. And the results for last year, you can see for yourself, they're very strong. And again, we're pleased. We're particularly pleased about the momentum. The momentum in the business. The confidence not only in ourselves as to what we're delivering, but from our customers. There's momentum in our customers for what we're able to offer. So a year we're pleased with. But that's about the what we've done, and I'd just like to remind you about the how. Because it's who we are, what we're trying to do, how we're doing it, which underpins our confidence. And we set out in 2010 the business that we wanted to be. Many of you will recognise that slide. We make no apologies. It's absolutely the same slide we talked about in 2010. How we drive the business forward, delivering growth and returns. And it's working. It's worked very well, and I know it will continue working for us in the future. And that model, a short paper position, really limiting our investors' exposure to what we think is a less attractive business model. Long recycling position, where we own the source of the fibre, the source of our product, and then really building in packaging, but packaging behind customers have very consistent demand and growing demand. The big FMCG, the food and drink industry, other areas that have very similar characteristics, such as today, 78% of our volumes go to customers with that consistent growing demand in a fragmented market where there's a huge opportunity for growth and innovation. That's why we've grown again our volumes on a like-for-like basis, despite the uncertainties that we've faced over the last 12 months. And how we've built a pan-European network. All major economies in Europe are covered. It is an unparalleled coverage, a huge opportunity for further growth as it still remains fragmented. And the returns. 6 years, I put on this graph here, are in the sort of the red bar, it's the return on sales. Start off at 4.7%, we're now 9.3%. That's the value add coming through. This is about the solutions we're giving to our customers. So 460 basis point improvement. And our return on capital employed, our principal measure, up from 10.1% to 15.4%, despite the initial diluting effect from acquisitions. So that's about the how. And Adrian's going to take us through much more about what we've done.
Thank you, Miles, and good morning, everyone. As always, I'm delighted to be presenting our full year results today, and not even the mild distraction of the in-out vote can cast a shadow of what has been another good year of delivering against all our financial targets. Currency translation has again had a negative impact on our translated financials for the year as a whole, and in order to explain what has been happening in the business, I will, as usual, be talking about the constant currency changes as I go through the presentation. So to recap on what Miles has just set out, our highlights are sustained volume growth of 3.1%, which for me is the best yardstick in terms of our growing of the top line. Further improvements in both margin and return on capital. We're delivering in the upper half of our margin target, which as I'm sure you remember, we upgraded only last year. Return on capital is above our target range, although as this is measured on average capital employed throughout the year, we do not yet have the full effect of our recent acquisitions. Our balance sheet is still strong, and even after the acquisitions, we remained at our target gearing level. Earnings per share following both organic and M&A-driven activity has grown this year by 16%, which we feel is a decent result by any measure. You're all familiar with our five financial key performance indicators which describe our medium-term targets. Once again, we've delivered on each and every metric, demonstrating real consistency in our business model. Volume growth is ahead of our GDP plus one target, which we calculate to be 2.8%. Our volume is also ahead of the corrugated market, which grew 2.3% on a weighted basis. Return on sales, as I mentioned before, having increased by 50 basis points to 9.3%, is in the upper half of our target range. Return on average capital employed improved 70 basis points through both increased profitability and also balance sheet discipline, especially over working capital. This ratio is calculated on an average capital employed basis at the end of every month. Cash conversion has come in at 112%, reduced from the prior year and as expected, moving down closer to our target of at least 100%. Cash management remains a priority and an area of constant focus. Net debt is higher, driven by both the cash paid out and debt brought in on our new business acquisitions. It now stands at 2x EBITDA, and I'll talk more about cash flow and our balance sheet strength shortly. This slide summarises our financial highlight headlines. Revenue is up 9% and operating profit up 16%. I'll take you through the bridges for these key line items in a moment. Dividend per share is up 12%, in line with reported EPS growth at actual exchange rates. Asset turnover is a good measure of asset efficiency, and whilst we're targeting this to improve over time, I'm not too surprised that we've only managed to hold it constant, given the significant acquisitions made in the year. As always, it's difficult to set out in a slide exactly how revenue has progressed for us, given the impact our largest input cost, paper, has on the overall selling price of packaging, which is why I always prefer to keep attention on volume growth and added value. That said, currency translation has taken £101 million off our reported revenue, which reflects a substantial headroom in half one and some unwinding in the second half of the year as sterling has weakened for reasons we're all very conscious of, particularly today. Taking a starting point of £3.7 billion, the largest impact is from acquisitions, and here we have 11 months' contribution from Durapak, 9 months from Lantero, 6 months from Cartonpack, 4 months from Milas, and a little less than a month from TRM. It's fair to say we've not been sitting on our hands when it comes to M&A, and we're delighted with the performance of these businesses. This figure is also net of disposals such as Stepak, and of course does not include the two further acquisitions we've just announced today. From there you'll see that on an underlying basis, revenues grew by 1%. Our 3.1% corrugated box volume delivered an uplift of just over £80 million, while sales price and mix reduced revenues by around £10 million, reflecting the impact of slightly lower paper prices over the whole year. Other volumes relate to external sales of paper, recycling and corrugated sheets. Moving now to the operating profit bridge. Our growth has been driven both organically through volumes and inorganically by acquisitions. FX was a headwind, as I've just described. Regarding acquisitions, the new businesses are all delivering and have fully embraced the challenge to deliver our anticipated synergies over the next couple of years. Input costs have been favourable by £10 million, coincidentally fully matching the impact of lower paper prices reflected in sales price and mix. I say coincidentally matching exactly, given external factors do not usually respect our reporting timeframes. As you'd by now expect, volumes have been the largest driver of our profit growth. We have a similar amount of drop through on additional volume as in previous reporting periods. Margins have improved across the group as a whole by some 50 basis points. Of the corrugated packaging regions, the improvements have been broadly similar across all the regions. All have had benefits from operational gearing and our continued emphasis on delivering higher quality, value-added packaging to our pan-European customers. What is worth me highlighting is that the regions which have had large structural changes, Western Europe, now with Lantero, and Central Europe, now with Durapac, have both managed to improve their margins despite the pressures that come with integrating large new businesses. This is a real credit to our teams on the ground and the way they have remained focused on their customers and also driving forward the integration task with pace and assiduity. We highlighted some of the team at our last Capital Markets Day, and it's no fluke that they've continued to deliver. Integrating a new business requires significant planning and then multifunctional teams to work alongside our new colleagues from the first minute they become part of the group. A tremendous admiration to work all parties put in and great confidence going forward, given we've done it a few times now. In plastics, our margins have improved by 160 basis points, in line with our expectations and what we set out when we described our restructuring program, and we expect more to come. When I joined the business, Miles was very clear that our continued success and earning the right to grow depended upon tight cash management. This year, we can again report that this intensity has not diminished. We've had another working capital benefit, with the ratio of average monthly working capital to sales down to 1.6%. We've now improved this ratio from a 3.6%, which we were very pleased with 3 years ago, but we're still not satisfied. Clearly, we cannot always expect inflows at the same level as last year, which was material, or this year, which was still pretty decent. However, when we make an acquisition, we always see an opportunity. CapEx of £201 million reflects the confidence we have to build on and strengthen our excellent market position, and I'll cover this a little more fully in a moment. Our leverage has increased as expected by both the effect of new acquisitions and the weakening of sterling towards the end of the year. Without both of these effects, we would have continued to delever. Taking our starting point last year, we have the benefit of free cash flow. Cash exceptional costs relate primarily to previously described restructuring and broadly track the income statement charge. The acquisitions and disposal expenditure cost is the cost including the acquired debt of Durapac Lantero, Cartonpack Milas and TRM, net of our Stepak disposal proceeds received at the very start of the year. Our track record of sustainable dividend growth is a key tenet of our commitment to shareholders, and this year we paid out £108 million in dividends. As I pointed out earlier, we've had a negative on FX. We seek, where possible, to hedge our balance sheet exposure by proportionally matching the currency of debt and assets. The weakening of sterling towards the end of the year gives us this negative effect. Our strategy on investing in the business is relatively simple. We have a strict returns criteria for both organic projects and new acquisitions. We tightly manage our balance sheet to create the headroom to invest. and where the projects we consider are in line with our corporate plan and exceed our returns criteria, we will invest. This year, we've invested more than £70 million over and above depreciation. Our total investment in CapEx of around £200 million, about 35% was spent on growth initiatives, around 30% on efficiency projects, and the balance on health and safety, IT and maintenance. Health and safety expenditure is always greater when we acquire a business, and not an area we're prepared to shy away from, given our commitment to creating a safe working environment for all our employees. On efficiency CapEx, it's worth noting that this, like our growth CapEx, delivers future benefits. In my estimation, our like-for-like SG&A expense is less than 2 years ago in absolute terms, and if you consider inflation, is some £30 to £40 million lower than it would have been if we'd not invested in improving our efficiency. And you can see a photo there of a brand new greenfield site in Germany for our point of sale and display business, and I'm sure Miles will talk a little bit more about that later. Sorry, skip that one. On acquisitions, when we evaluate a new business, we consider the purchase cost, the amount of additional capital investment required, any cash inflows from working capital management, and outflows for restructuring. Against this, we have a good track record in identifying synergies we can generate, and all of our acquisitions are in line with our medium-term objectives, taking into account all of those factors. Whilst it's easy to focus on an acquisition being earnings-enhancing, especially given these historically low debt levels, debt cost levels, this is of little concern for us when evaluating opportunities. We're proud of our strong balance sheet and even prouder of our investment-grade credit rating, which gives us access to a diverse range of providers of liquidity. This year, we extended further the duration of our debt by issuing a 7-year euro bond with a coupon of 2.25%. Here's the usual guidance slide. I'm not going to talk you through each of these lines. You can read the figures. The majority of the figures are very similar to this year, and just if anyone, as I'm sure you will have, has got specific questions, we'll take them from Q&A. So to wrap up, for me, our business model is built to create sustainable value. It's about being able to deliver on our commitments to shareholders year in and year out. Miles will be talking about how we're driving further growth in a minute. Our ambition remains fairly and squarely to continue the journey highlighted on this graph. Actions speak louder than words, and as you can see, over the last 6 years, we've consistently grown EPS and dividends with a compound annual growth rate of 30% and 26% respectively. On that note, I'd like to hand back to Miles, who's going to talk more about how we're continuing to invest in growth.
Yeah, thank you, Adrian. That's excellent. For last year, let's talk about how we see the future. I should stress that some of the themes I'm going to be talking about will be covered in a lot more detail at the coming Capital Markets Day, particularly around what's happening in store and in e-commerce. It's a very exciting area. But I'm going to set out an outline here so everybody's very clear about how we see the future. We've delivered in the past, but we're very excited about the future. And it's because of the changes with our customers and their requirements on us. With that vibrancy, it allows us to grow and add more value. And the demands from the customers in two principal areas, one around the innovation in the product and the service, and the second is on the geographic expansion, about consolidating the supply chain. I'd like to talk about the first area of the consumer trends. This is about our innovation in service and product. And as we can see in the retail sector, our customers, those large consumer-facing businesses are facing continuing and sustained change in the consumer trends, aided by the communication that consumers have through smartphones, etc. And it's gaining momentum. And I've just put down four high-level examples of these changes in the consumer trends. So the first two, about how the power of advertising outside of the store is eroding. It just doesn't have the effect that it used to. And brand loyalty is also falling. So if you're one of our customers, you realise that of the consumer, 60% of consumers decide which product to buy at the point of sale. Not before they come into the store, but at the point of sale. And if your product isn't available on shelf, whereas previously 25% of your customers would choose another brand, today it's over 50%. So the whole image, the in-store packaging has never been more important. Packaging is the new advertising. That's what it is. With the change in the proliferation of retail outlets, convenience, discount, supermarkets, it's very dynamic. And this proliferation means the packaging has to adapt to those different formats, again, building in additional value. And very excitingly, the trend we're all seeing, we saw it very, very strongly at the last Christmas, about the rise of e-retail. 43% of consumers are now buying on the internet. And we're investing heavily behind these trends. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about the retail-ready packaging in store and display. And then we'll come on to e-commerce, but then we'll also talk about our leadership in implementation. So thought and creativity leadership and leadership in implementation across Europe. I show a picture there about display. We're seeing the footfall on the high street fall consistently. In the UK, it could be between 4 and 5% per annum. People are not going to the high street to buy in the same frequency they used to. The average till value, the average amount a consumer is spending in the shop, is falling. So what the retailers and our customers have to do is to attract the consumer whilst they're in the store. And this is an example of a display. And this display, a 3D display, is becoming more and more prevalent as retailers, as our customers, attract that consumer at the point of sale. And we're investing heavily behind that. And here is the a new site, as Adrian's outlined. It's in Germany. It's the absolute state-of-the-art facility. It's just unrepeated across Europe. This has the ability to supply over a very wide geographic area because of the value that's in the display business. And we're confident that this will give us a very strong leadership position across Central Europe. And we've also acquired today another business called Creo, which gives us a leadership position in the UK. And the UK and Central Germany are the largest display markets in Europe. And we have a leadership position in both. This is going to provide a lot of value to our customers and to us as well. But let's just look at e-commerce, because there's a lot of talk about this. E-commerce. In Europe, 237 billion euros of sale in 2015. It is growing at least at 10% per annum. Only 43% of consumers currently use the internet to buy. But if you go back 3 years, that was less than 20%. So we're seeing growth going forward of at least 10% per annum. That is 24 billion euros of additional sales. So what? 4.2 billion packages. What does that mean for us? Is it just a volume gain? Is everything but a volume gain? Because what you're seeing today in the solution of packaging in e-commerce is not the solution that you will see over the coming years. Our customers need the packaging to suit their future requirements. And here are some of their requirements. The void fill. The average void space in a box that's delivered through e-commerce today is 50%. Half of the packaging is empty. The cost of delivery, on average, for our customers is 10% of their sales. So 24 billion euros a year are spent on delivery of e-commerce, of which 12 billion is empty space. 12 billion euros last year on empty space. If we can save half that space through right-sizing the box, which needs a lot of technology, which we lead, you can save 6 billion euros a year growing at 10% per annum. If we have, let's just say, 20% of the market, that's 1.2 billion euros of cost we can save our customers. Now, it's not about the brown box. It's about the opportunity with their delivery and the void space. And that needs technology. That's the value that we're able to create. And around branding, it's just a brown box. Why not cover it with the brands we're supplying? Packaging is the new advertising. But to do that, you need the capability to print whatever the brander wants, and we absolutely lead in digital printing. We're the only supplier of a corrugated digital print on a wide web format. It's a box of one for us. So whichever customer you are, however big you are, each box can be individual. So the growth of the micro brands, etc., we can deal with. Big companies that are growth of micro brands through e-commerce, bypassing bricks and mortar straight through the internet. We can deliver that. Product retention. Product retention. 10% of sales go on distribution. Product retention. Rates of return. If you're buying fashion items, typically a third can be returned. It costs 10% to distribute, yet a third is coming back. How much is that costing? So it's about retention rates. This is all about the inbox experience when you receive a product that you want to retain it. You don't want to return it. This is all printing and inbox. Yes, it's the box. And solutions of the last mile. Urbanization, the growth in e-commerce. How do you deliver the last mile? It's going to be somebody on a bike coming to your house. And they've got your pizza in that bike and there's been some potholes. You don't want to know the condition that's going to be in. We can all imagine, particularly as we've ordered a coffee as well. Not a nice mixture. You've got to have the right packaging. How can you add value? It's not the box, it's about the product it's protecting. It's about serving the consumer. So you can see why we're excited. You can see why we put such investment into this. We have the thought leadership, the solution leadership as well, and about the implementation leadership. How are you going to deliver these solutions to all customers wherever they are in Europe? This is the network that we have built and are building. Every time we acquire, we put our innovation services into that market. So no customer is more than 2 hours away from one of our centres. A consistent centre, the same skills, the same access to technology held centrally, developed centrally. It's a consistent part of our theme, and it's a major part of why we've been able to grow so strongly. And then about, that's about the innovation in the service. Our next customer's demand is about geographic coverage. They can consolidate their supply chains. Absolutely fits with our strategy. We've had a step change in the last 12 months, moving into Iberia, and again another acquisition announced this morning into Portugal. Just over a year ago, we had nothing in Iberia. We now have 10% market share and growing well ahead of the market. We've acquired right the way through the Balkans, Central Europe, Eastern Europe, and into Istanbul, and we further built our position in the UK as well. 13 new or expanded countries. We're the consolidator of choice. All of them are exclusive bilateral negotiations. We're delighted with the reception we've had from our customers and all of our new employees, yet we're only 15% of the market. It's highly fragmented. We're our customer supplier of choice and the consolidator of choice. And when we find that it's not attractive, then we'll invest internally. Many of our customers are very large indeed. Wonderful, wonderful customers. And we just put up here a small selection. You know, Mondelez, we know the success we've enjoyed there. Global customer. And obviously Nestle, again, wonderful company and recognising as their very best supplier. So we've grown 3.1% in the current year. Slight initial dilution from the acquisitions and then coming back very strongly. Well ahead of the market, consistent growth. And that's Europe, and we've talked about this previously, our global offering. These solutions we're providing, technology-led. We have established these offices. And what I really want to say is it's really giving us very good visibility into those markets. It's giving us a greater relationship with many of these customers. In understanding not only their regional but their longer term needs. How do they solve these consumer trends that continue to change? So giving us that access to the customers right at the centre of their thinking. So really just to say that we continue to invest in those offices and we're absolutely delighted with the feedback and the success that they're enjoying. So in summary, we're very pleased with the growth in our volume, market share gain, the financial returns, the additional investments that we've made. But most importantly, it's about that momentum. Confidence internally and confidence from our customers coming right into 2016-17. Thank you very much. Alex Mead from J.P. Morgan.
Can I have three?
Thank you. Three, please. So the first one, quite easy, just on the plastics division, Adrian. Clearly good margin expansion. I wonder, is the restructuring complete there now? Is there more to come? And what sort of quantum of margin uplift can we expect in the current year? Secondly, with regard to the organic growth, 3.1% obviously much better than the market as a whole. I wonder if there's any colour you can give us as to the relative performance of the FMCG side compared to the industrial and the other consumer segments of your business. And then just thirdly, on the e-commerce side, Miles, clearly when you personalise, if you will, a box for e-commerce, it's going to cost the customer a lot more. Are you able to give them evidence that leads to greater repeat orders, which would justify the extra expense?
Do you want me to step back there? Can you do that?
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. So on plastics, the restructuring program in terms of the asset movement was completed roughly a year ago. Not quite, but roughly. Clearly with that, it was a large transition, particularly in the European business, between moving manufacturing from Northern Europe down to Southeastern Europe, effectively. And it's all about now rebuilding and driving sales based on the new facilities. And we've seen the benefit drop through, the low-hanging fruit have dropped through now in terms of on margin. So what we expect, and what if I go through the budget and how the business plan is for that division, what I expect now is again another period of good margin progression as we get operational leverage through from that business. I mean, but it is doing very well.
Yeah, look, on the organic 3.1, 78% of our volume are in categories that that exhibit very short, medium, long-term consistency and growth opportunity. And that 3.1 is predominantly in that 78%. So you'll say that therefore actually we've grown much more in those areas, which is absolutely true. But that sort of reflects the economies, really. I think Europe as a whole has been quite challenging. If you look at housing, if you look at industrial investment, some of the uncertainty has brought some demand down. But that's why we focus in the areas that we do, in those sectors with very consistent demand, and particularly on the pan-Europeans, and the growth there again has been quite significantly ahead of the 3.1. There's plenty of other volume out there. We like to be quite picky. You can see our margins going up. So if it's not what fits our assets, then we won't do it. E-commerce is such an interesting area. We are looking at this whole issue about the value that's created and about customer stickiness and how you just get repeat and repeat and repeat orders because they become very, very efficient because of low returns, etc. And we've been doing some work, and the evidence is when you personalise, when it has effectively your name or your picture on it, it can become very, very sticky. And the sort of things we've been trialing, actually on pet food. Somebody's got a dog. They particularly like their dog. They think their dog looks very attractive. So they order their pet food every week. Sometimes it's speciality food. And they like a picture of their animal on the box. And they never move away. They order again and again, electronically, every single time. The efficiency is built. The box has a picture of their dog. And that's just a very, very simple example about how you start to add value. But of course, it's got to have that box with that picture, so you need the technology. And that's what we absolutely need. So an early example, but you need these examples to get the confidence of something actually we can start to match. What we're seeing, particularly in e-commerce, new brands are avoiding the bricks and mortar, they're going straight to e-com, and therefore you can get a proliferation of brands and how we manage that. But it's, I've absolutely no doubt with the repeatability, the electronic nature of it, etc., when you're getting it right, it will lead to much greater customer retention. And there's some very good evidence. Let's face it, it's still early days for e-com.
Hi, it's Barry Dixon from Davy. Two questions, please, Miles. Just the first, you might just help us through in terms of the whole pricing environment around corrugated and you seeing a negative price mix in the bridge, Adrian, that you presented. Mm-hmm. I suppose you might just help us in terms of what you're seeing or what you saw in corrugated prices during the year, because I think some of your peers talked about an increase in corrugated at the turn of the year, which doesn't seem to be coming through in your own numbers. And so is that part of the reason for your superior growth relative to the industry? And maybe related to that, Miles, is at what point do we start to see, or how do we start to see the impact of all of this innovation? Do we see it in terms of higher corrugated prices, or do we see it in terms of greater volumes as your customers you know, become more dependent on you and therefore pay you for your R&D through higher volumes. So that's just really around corrugated pricing. And then the second question is you were quick off the mark in announcing a testliner price increase about a month ago. The industry followed you. We've seen proposed increases in kraftliner. Maybe just talk through in terms of how successful or otherwise those increases or attempts to increase prices have been. Thank you.
Yeah. Can you do the first one?
Yeah.
In terms of pricing environment, Barry, we saw, and bear in mind we're out of kilter with calendar year, so we're in our financial year, which will be different to other companies you may follow. In terms of paper prices in our reporting, our financial year, we saw an increase of about 40 euros a ton on testliner early in our financial year. And we saw that erode in the second half of the financial year. We saw the price rises, the input costs being passed through, and then obviously as prices start to soften, you see customers are aware of what's happening, and we work with them to recover the falling input prices. So, I mean, I don't really know what competitors have done, neither should I, in terms of their pricing. However, what I do know with us is that clearly the rises that went through at the beginning of the year were passed, and as we've now, through our financial year, seen input prices coming down, we've naturally worked with our customers on those too. More than that, it is quite difficult to predict. I mean, you mentioned testliner prices going up or price rises being announced at the moment. It's not abnormal when you have a period of tight demand. Tight supply and big demand, which is what we're going through at the moment. What will that result in? Would it be a similar situation for us? It's very difficult to judge it. For us, it's really still fundamentally about the added value, working with customers on performance packaging, working with them on what value we can add, looking at pan-European customers and being able to price consistently on an AV basis across Europe with targets on quality, targets on service. I mean, that's really the focus. In terms of what it means individually at unit price level, I mean, there is a portion of the business, of course, locally where that has an impact, but it's insignificant really for how we're driving forward, and it doesn't really show through. I mean,
just on pricing in general of the raw materials, we can only talk for ourselves. We're such a size now, we can source globally, and what happens in any individual market, that's less relevant than it used to be. So if you look at things like craft, we've seen a reduction. Why not? Because there's own capacity. We can bring it in from the States and other countries, and that's what we do. I don't know what other people are doing or saying, but that's where we are. I think that's a feature of our model. You know, as we've grown, we've invested a lot in our back office function. Whilst we are European, you know, it's very important to build resilience into the company, that different regions support each other and building these back office functions, and one of them has been on procurement, and now sourcing more globally because of our size, efficiency and demand, I think it's put us in put us in good stead, and there's been a small reduction. But, you know, how it goes in the future, we just
don't. But it's all about scale. I mean, the opportunity you get through scale is enormous. The choice of the market, the ability to arbitrage, the ability to source. I mean, having a central procurement team that are purely focused on that, having a fiber sourcing team that's purely focused on that, you see the results. I mean, it's just even over the last 3 or 4 years, I mean, it's just been impressive year on year.
Hi, I'm Justin Jordan from Jefferies. Firstly, well done on the great fiscal 16. Obviously, you're just raising the bar for expectations going forward. But in all seriousness, just going forward, I've got three quick questions. Firstly, can you just remind us on capital allocation, what you think in terms of returns expectations? And I'm thinking about, guiding to 200 million of CapEx going forward. Do you have higher returns expectations on your growth CapEx projects vis-a-vis your 12 to 15% return for the group overall? And do you have higher returns expectations for that vis-a-vis what you might expect for M&A spend, for example? Secondly, on the 50 million restructuring charge in fiscal 17, is that entirely related to the M&A completed in fiscal 16, or are there any internal restructuring projects within, should I say, core DS Smith? And thirdly, just in terms of your new slide on page 30 of global offering, are you signaling anything to us here about further non-European expansion plans?
I just didn't quite catch the second question, Justin. Was that
The 50 million cash restructuring cost in fiscal 17.
And how much of that was to do with acquisition?
I'm assuming it's all M&A related, but I'm just questioning, is there anything that you're doing internally?
I'll cover that. So should I do capital allocation? Well, you can do capital allocation.
In terms
of capital allocation, yes, of course, on an internally funded project, we have a higher expectation of returns. I mean, you'd expect that. A shorter payback, more certainty. It's your own business. It's you're investing in an area where you have absolute knowledge of. So if you look at our growth capex that we said sort of roughly 30-35%, we would have a good returns target on that to come through over the next 2 to 4 years. Two to four years forward. Average paybacks around about 3 years, more likely on classic capex. Whereas a big factory like Marshall, I mean, obviously that's a greenfield site, but it will have the similar returns to target. It's over a slightly longer term. But again, it's in an area we know well and where we have our investment, so we're very confident over those returns. On M&A, we obviously risk adjust a bit more, and we look a little bit more at country-specific risk where it's a new country and we have no expertise over. In terms of the exceptional restructuring, this year's restructuring charge included the closure of Wandsborough, which we talked about at the half year. We also closed a site in Bristol and a site in Pulheim, and so there's a proportion in that. In the annual report, we give a very full description, so when that comes out, that'll give you a very clear breakdown.
Yeah, and the non-European, everybody can see our business model is focused on the solutions for our customers and how we can really differentiate them and add value to our customers and promote return. What we find is that as we develop more, as we invest more, those solutions are becoming more and more unique, and there's more technology in them. So suddenly, as a business model, you're not just sort of a bricks and mortar and a manufacturing base. You have technology, and the technology is transportable. Where it takes us, I just don't know. But there's a quite a strong customer pull to look at the technology and the solutions that have been developed, particularly in companies that are almost starting up and creating themselves, so they don't have the existing infrastructure. Who are they going to work with, partner with them when they're moving at pace? So we don't know. We are investing a lot. The response in Europe is excellent. All the cost of the developments are all written off. And you've seen the margin growth. No, it's held on the balance sheet. It's all just expensive. Where can this take us in the future? The truth is, we don't know, but we're excited about it. And our customers are quite excited as well. Hector.
Yeah.
Good morning, Hector Forsyth from Stiefel. A series of questions. Let's see how we get on. First one, can you talk just through the management of energy costs and other input costs? And clearly, you alluded, I think, in the statement, states they're clearly lower at this point. How far and how visible have you locked those in? Is there more benefit to come?
Okay.
Do you want to take them
strip-feed me?
Yeah, I'll strip-feed you up.
Okay. Energy costs, we have an energy procurement and hedging team based in Holland. We look at it. I mean, Miles and I go through it monthly. There's a specialist team which are some of our central functions, including Treasury, involved with, also on a monthly basis. I think this year we're hedged about 70%, aren't we, Miles, something like that. We actively hedge it, so we look at it on quite a dynamic basis. We have a strategic partner in an energy company as well, which looks at the risk management execution. We have, do we expect it to change much this year? Well, it's softened, whichever way you want to look at it. It's going slightly against us, but as I said, we're hedged, so it's slightly more expensive so far, but the summer has a major impact. Gas reserves, you know, still at all-time highs. It was another mild winter, a very mild winter on the continent, which drives pricing. So we don't expect, but you never know, because energy has a geopolitical aspect as well. But at this stage, we don't expect anything too different year on year, and we're hedging, you know, the extremes of that.
Could you scale the energy cost for us?
We set it out in the annual report. This year, the benefit's about £9 million year on year.
Okay, thank you. Just on the exceptional items for the year go forward, and where is that being spent? So we've got £50 million of guidance, and you break that out. Are there any trimmings to the portfolios that we might expect?
Within the 50 guidance, there's an element that we know with absolute certainty because it's a rollover of some existing programs. More than that, at this stage, Hector, obviously with acquisitions coming in, we know there'll be an element of that, but I can't sit and break it down other than the fact that it's a reasonable number to guide at. Do I think it will be more than that? No. At this stage, I genuinely don't. So I think it could be less than that, yes, quite possibly. But but I just think it's reasonable to put a number out there that we feel makes sense, given we've just been through a lot of growth. We've got some more growth coming this year. And with all of these, you have levels of restructuring and reorganization costs.
Okay, thanks for that. And then on working capital, great performance in terms of the working capital you've got at the moment. Can you give us the indication of the delta year on year? Is that more inventory efficiency? And where can we see that going? Could it possibly go below zero?
This year, I think it's about 50 million inflows. It's around that level. It was about double of that the year before. So it is, you do get into levels, areas of diminishing returns. When you make an acquisition, you get a great opportunity. Because generally speaking, it won't be an area that's that well managed, and certainly when you buy a private company, it classically hasn't been. So we always see that as an opportunity. We think as we progress with our footprint, our blueprint review, each side operating in the same way, managing through paper sourcing in the same way, we see opportunities all the time in inventory. And our head of paper and recycling is running a quite sophisticated project on that at the moment to look at just what more we can take out of inventory. In terms of finished goods, classically we say it's not a major item within a packaging business because you're producing just in time a lot. However, with a lot of sites, you do build up a level of finished goods that's probably higher than where Miles and I want it to be today. So we think there's something to go at there. Managing receivables, it's just business as usual, and we look at that monthly. And then how you manage your creditors, again, is just a discipline. And the more you have around central procurement, so the more procurement contracts we get year on year, the better we get on that. We are rolling out technology on procurement across the group, so we expect to see some benefits from that too. But it's always difficult to sit here and think, we'll get the same again next year, because it's still a pretty decent ratio. When we talked about 3.5% 3 years ago, we said that was industry leading at the time, but we felt we could do better. We have done better, so I feel we can do much more. It's the art of the possible, but I don't think it will be material steps, and zero will be quite ambitional, and I think maybe we'll set that as the target now, but But it's just constant initiatives. It's not letting it lose focus. You just have to be on it all the time. And we've got some really good teams who are on it all the time.
Okay. Very good.
Said it's one of Aidan's personal objectives.
Okay. Not the zero, by the way. Just for the avoidance of doubt.
we keep a note on that. Then a couple of things. When you look at the split of packaging volumes between FMCG type and others, is it possible to give a guide in terms of the differences in return between the FMCG base and the other side of it?
But we do look at all of that. Very broadly, we are on a return on capital business. And the FMCG and similar characteristics make up 70%. Generally, you have a margin that's slightly below the group average, slightly below. However, the asset utilization is extremely good. So you have some products, particularly in that sort of 22%, where the margins are extremely good. But you hear from them on a Monday, you don't hear from them for another month. The machine's sitting there. So the margins are slightly lower, generally. But the asset utilization is very, very strong, and that's what we have to focus on. I think, you know, when you look at the strength of business model, getting the right balance, you know, it's an uncertain economic environment that we've worked through in the last 6 years, and I think this focus on that consistency has served us well in terms of the cash flows and the returns on capital. But the challenge is now with this technology to get that FMCG margin sort of up above the group. We can talk about averaging and mass, but what's happened is the FMCG margin keeps on rising, the group average keeps on rising, so you're kind of always sort of chasing the turn. As you get more and more in that category, you're sort of, you're forever getting closer to the average. So it's just the maths of that. But the margins are improving, but they will always be slightly lower than the more speculative ones.
Okay, thank you. And the very last question for me is just, could you define for me and for us exactly what box volume growth is, what you're measuring, given light weighting, given more sophistication, et cetera?
Absolutely. This is a measure in terms of the area of boxes that we are supplying. So as you can imagine, it's published, it's all checked, it's reported on, et cetera, et cetera. And it's looking at the area that we are producing for our customers. There are different ways, but we find this is the most accurate measure. If we're actually to look at the number of boxes, it's actually going far more than that, because you have a smaller average pack size because of smaller families. There's smaller shopping trips, spending less each time, but we look at it on a square meter basis for boxes, not sheets, such as a box.
Okay, thanks. I think we can spend some time on that one. Thank you very much.
Great. Well, look, I think we've been an hour, and I'd just like to thank everybody again for coming today. And we're very pleased with the results, with the growth, with the returns, and momentum. Thank you very much. Very good.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now replace your handsets. The call has now ended.